This hour we have on the line with us actor Dwayne Hickman, who a lot of people remember from the television series Dobie Gillis, and some people might be wondering whatever happened to Dobie Gillis. Well, he's been a very, very busy guy, and we're going to touch base with him right now. Hi, Dwayne. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Well, first of all, we're going to be seeing you on television
Sunday night.
Sunday night.
I'm in Surviving Gilligan's Island, which is a movie about the making of Gilligan's Island and the reminiscences of the cast and so forth. It's quite a movie.
Now, you do have a kind of connection to Gilligan's Island because one of your former co-stars, and Dobie Gillis, was Gilligan, right?
Well, yeah, Bob Denver, first he got his start in Dobie Gillis playing Maynard G. Krebs, Bob Denver. And then after Dobie Gillis went off the air, he did Gilligan's Island. And so he refers to it in the movie, and I play, of all things, the network head, the guy who doesn't want to do Gilligan's Island. And I have lines like, gee, this should be a hit like Dobie Gillis. You know, I have all those lines. It's very funny and very charming, but it was fun because they asked me if I'd do it, and I, you know, it was kind of like life imitating art. I worked for CBS for about 10 years as a program executive. So I'm playing the head of CBS in this movie. And, of course, Bob is the star, and Don Wells and Russell Johnson and the people from the show. So it was really fun.
We're talking here on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD with Dwayne Hickman, who played Dobie Gillis. 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. 10 years, you said, you worked as an executive.
I was a program exec at CBS.
Do you think that your experiences as an actor and being someone who was on a hit series was perfect for you becoming a network executive as opposed to the suits that are normally there?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, it gave me a great understanding of how the network works. On the other hand, you know, I wasn't around my element, which is acting in the actual making of a series. So in that respect, it was a little different. But I went there to learn how to produce shows and how to put shows together and sell them to a network, and I stayed a long time. And I must say it was nice to get a steady paycheck. But on the other hand, I kind of missed the other things. You know, when I left CBS in 87, I did Bring Me the Head of Dobie Gillis, the movie, the reunion movie, and I started directing, and I directed shows like Designing Women and whatever. And it was kind of good to get back to that. But they're very different things. And I must say, yes, my acting prepared me, and no, it didn't prepare me.
There always seems to be the adverse sides to the business, the producers and actors of television series versus the suits. Having been both, do you have more empathy for both sides now?
Well, yeah, yes and no. They really are different. They're different camps. You know, the people that make shows, the actors, producers, writers, they're on one side and they're thinking creatively. The network is a bunch of business people, corporate people, that really have to think of the bottom line, which is profits and ratings and all those things. So and they put up the money. So they're kind of at odds, the two sides, you know. I tried as a network. I handled shows like Maude, Good Times, All in the Family, WKRP, MASH, shows like that. And I tried to be, in Designing Women, I tried to be very understanding and supportive of the producers and not adversarial. Many network people are kind of adversarial. In fact, I play an adversarial guy in this movie, Surviving Gilligan's Island. My opening line is, this is the worst idea I've ever heard, you know, the idea for the series. So, and then when it is made into a pilot in the movie and then shown to an audience, the audience loves it. I can't figure out why the audience would love this show. So in many respects, I play a kind of typical but unfairly positioned network guy. You know, they're not that bad. I play a little bit more villainous than they really are.
Now, when you talk about networks are looking at a bottom line, still, having said that, there seems to be a difference nowadays as to, shall we say, nursing a television show along. I mean, there are things that go on the air today that get canceled tomorrow that might have been given a longer period of time. I look at some of the classic shows that have been on the air over the years that had some difficulties in finding its audience initially.
Many shows. Yeah. For example, Dobie Gillis was one of them. It took us a long time to find our audience. It took several months. There are shows like MASH, I think, took a while. All in the Family, big hits, you know. Didn't become hits right away. And I think that it was fairer to the shows because a show does have to find this audience, and the people have to find the show and get used to the people and get used to the concepts and ideas. Today, it's like you have to be an overnight hit, and it's very difficult. It really is, and you have no chance to work out the kinks and get the show better or fix the things that are broken, you know. So it's hard today. It's very difficult.
Is it fair, or...?
I don't think it's fair at all, no. You see, that's another thing, though. They buy shows today for, like, a few shows, maybe less than 13. 13 used to be an order, and I think they buy shows for 5 and 6 mm-hmm. episodes today. When they bought Dobie Gillis, the first year it went on the air in 1959, they bought the whole season. They bought Dobie Gillis for 39 shows, 39 and 13 repeats. So it was on 52 weeks. And at the end of that time, you had every chance. If you're not a hit, it's your fault. But it's not that you were yanked off the air because you didn't click with an audience right away, you know?
It seems like the pendulum has swung completely the other way because going back, I mean, that seems to... put a stranglehold on a network. If Dobie Gillis was not successful, and you would have known it, I guess, maybe after week 13, should it have stayed on for another, in essence, 26 weeks?
Well, they would have kept it or paid us off,
The
show off. But today they do that. I mean, they'll pull a show after a couple episodes, even if they've, say, bought 13, and they reduce the fees to deals, and they make deals and pay off people and all that. But a network today won't leave a show on the air if it's doing really lousy. They won't. They'll pull it off. So that's why they try to buy as few as possible.
How many years was Dobie Gillis on?
4 years. 147 episodes.
You can't get 147 episodes out of 4 years today, can you?
No. See, that's another thing. We made so many shows a year. Gilligan's Island is a good example. They were on 3 years, and I think they did like 130 shows, something like that. They did a lot of shows, and they were only on 3 years. And then they were pulled off the air, which was a shame because, you know, the show is still running. And Bob Denver, we kind of got off that subject. You know, he was Maynard G. Krebs, and he was a good friend of mine, and he went on to his own show. And I still keep in touch with Bob. He lives in West Virginia. And he's a very decent guy, good friend, and he and I have always gotten along very well. And so it was kind of nice to be in his show, you know, a show about his show.
We had the opportunity to have him on the program here a couple of years ago, and I also was lucky enough to work with him and Sherwood Schwartz,
mm-hmm.
because we had a show here in Montreal, the Just for Laughs Festival, where we were honoring Sherwood Schwartz.
Uh-huh.
And I was the host of that for the Just for Laughs Festival, so I got to meet both of them and also Barry Williams from the Brady Bunch.
Really?
And it was quite the experience to sit down and talk to Sherwood, who was the mastermind behind both of those shows that I just mentioned.
Well, Sherwood's in this movie that I did.
Really?
Surviving Gillian. Yeah, he's in the movie, talks to the camera, and I saw him last Tuesday night. We had a rough cut screening. Sort of like a small premiere, you know, for the cast and friends. And he looks very well and is doing fine, and he's part of the whole project.
He also seems to me, and having met some producers in the past, atypical of what you come across in producers. He's very jovial, very friendly, very happy-go-lucky kind of guy, and doesn't seem the kind of cutthroat personality that one normally comes in contact with as far as producers.
He's a good fella, and he's very bright. I mean, he's very talented. He's done, you know, Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island. He's done really shows that have really lasted and become big hits with the public, and you got to respect that. So he knows his business. He really does, and he did very well for himself.
We're talking with actor, former television executive, and I also understand artist.
Yes, I am an artist. I paint in oil on canvas, and I have shows and all that. In fact, I'm going to the Art Expo in San Francisco November 1st, and I'll be there exhibiting my works and all that. That's a trade show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm very active in my art. I always wanted to be an artist, really. I wanted to be an architect, and I got sidetracked. That's why, by the way, I paint architectural things, houses, bridges, gardens, you know,
mm-hmm.
Landscapes. And I always wanted to be that, and I got sidetracked into movies as a kid, and playing, you know, Claudette Colbert's son in a movie called Secret Heart. I played Jeanette McDonald's son in a thing called The Sun Comes Up. You know, a boy with green hair. I did all those movies as a kid. So then when I was older, I got into the Bob Cummings show about 1953 and playing his nephew, Bob Cummings' nephew, Chuck. I don't know if you remember the show, Love That Bob or Bob Cummings Show.
Was that the one where he was the photographer?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That's the one. And so I kind of got sidetracked into movies and TV and then went from Cummings into Dobie Gillis. But I really always wanted to be an architect and an artist, and it was only in the last 10, 15 years that I've gotten back to that, along with acting a little bit here and there and directing. I paint almost every day, and I love it, and I've done very well with it. Anybody that's curious can punch up my website, DwayneHickman.com. www.DwayneHickman.com, DwayneHickman, and look at my stuff, and, you know, if they're in San Francisco, they can come to the show.
We're talking with Dwayne Hickman here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD, 800-790-0991 is the number, star talk, 1-800-491-CJD. If you have any questions, this is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
Now more of CJAD's Halder Overnight on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak with Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, a free call on Bell Mobility, and 800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800, and we are talking with Dwayne Hickman, who was and forever will be Dobie Gillis.
I wrote a book, well, my wife wrote the book, and I helped, called Forever Dobie, The Many Lives of Dwayne Hickman. So, you know, I will be forever Dobie, forever.
Was there a concern when that show went off the air, I guess, 1963 around there?
Yeah, it went off in 63.
Was there a concern that you were typecast?
Worse than a concern. I couldn't hardly get a job. Really, it was. I did okay in a couple of instances. I got a movie called Cat Ballou, playing...
Yeah,
with Jane Fonda and Lee Marvin, a really funny comedy western in 65. And I was thrilled to get that. And I did some beach party movies with Frankie Avalon, How to Stuff a Wild Bikini, Ski Party... and another one, Dr. Goldfoot. But really, I was very typecast, and nobody wants to touch you when you're so identified with a TV character like that. When you play the title role in a series, it's kind of tough to go on and get other roles. So it was a problem for a long time. It was indeed.
And you just mentioned playing the lead character. It's one thing to get typecast when you're a supporting actor.
That's right.
But when you're typecast when you're the lead actor... sometimes you don't even get those available supporting character roles because you were a lead actor. Is that
That's correct? Right. That's right, and that's what happened to me. Well, Bob Denver, for example, was not the lead actor. He was the supporting actor as Maynard, my friend, and he went on to Gilligan, and then Gilligan typecast him like Dobie typecast me. So it can be a problem for a lot of actors.
Although he did find a little bit of success, I believe it was The Good Guys.
Yes, uh-huh.
With Herb Edelman, I guess?
Yeah, Herb Edelman. He did a show, but that didn't last very long. That was not a hit. In fact, he makes reference to that in the movie. The movie, Surviving Gilligan, is about the making of the show and all that happened during the making of it, the selling of it and then the making of it, and the reminiscences of all these different people that were in the show and what it was like. It's a very interesting film, and he makes reference to that show. And he says that it lasted about 10 minutes. So apparently it was like one season or something. I don't remember exactly.
We're talking with Duane Hickman here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800. You started, as you mentioned earlier, as a child actor.
Yeah.
And we have heard, of course, over the years, so many horror stories from child actors. I take it that yours is not one of them.
Well, no, I was lucky. But it's very hard for children. There's a tremendous amount of responsibility that kids face. And, you know, they're kids in an adult world because you're expected to really perform and do the job. And it's long hours and script to learn, dialogue, and a lot of pressure. And it's not good for kids to be under that kind of pressure. I would never want my child to be in the movies till he grows up, till he's an adult, frankly. I have a son, 8, and another son grown in his 30s. And my 30-some-year-old son was never in the business, and I would not want my 8-year-old to be in it. I think it's too hard for kids. I really do. And I was lucky, and I got through it, and I didn't go crazy or, you know, get put in prison or anything. So I was lucky, but I really think for the most part it's really tough for kids.
Yeah, but, you know, you did go through it, and knowing what you know and considering the fact that you had a pretty good experience as a child actor, don't you think your son could handle it if you controlled it?
Yeah, probably, but I wouldn't want to try it. I really wouldn't. I'm very much against it. I just think it's not for children. I've worked with a bunch of kids since I've been an adult, and I think it's hard for them. I really do, and I would not want to put mine in that position of having that pressure.
Because I know we've had another person we've had on the program who was also a former child actor who's done rather well as an adult is Dick Van Patten.
Yeah.
And he actually has a book out that talks about how one can work with children and be a child actor.
Oh, it can be done. Mm-hmm. It can be done, but I just think not for me, not for my child.
What are the biggest pitfalls? Is it the directors or is
it... Well, it's just too much pressure. It's not a normal life for a kid. I mean, the people that make shows, make movies, and TV shows are very serious-minded professionals, and they want the work done, and they want it done now, and so the kids don't have a chance to be kids and to be with other children and play and go to school normally. I think that at least it was, and I think it still is, that you have to go to school on the set 3 hours a day. Well, that 3 hours can be 10 minutes at a time, you know, in other words, you run in and you sit there for 15 minutes and you go back into a scene and all that. So that's how you get your education. You don't get a chance to be around other children. I just think it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of drugs around. There are problems that all children face. And I think it's even worse for kids in the movies. I really do.
7900991 Star Talk 1-800-491-CJD for the Laurentians, Eastern Townships, Ottawa Hall area, and also the border states. You did a TV movie. What was it? 1988.
Bring Me the Head of
Dobie Gillis.
Yeah, I did that in 88.
Was there a concern that you know the character that you played for so long on television was to a certain degree forgotten?
No, and actually not. In fact, the movie did very well. It didn't turn out as well as I had hoped because of the script and the direction and some problems in the making of it. But in terms of the ratings and everything, it was very well received, and people really enjoyed it, and it was kind of a hit. It was opposite the Winter Olympics. It aired in, I think, February of 88, and it was against the Winter Olympics and I think a miniseries called Noble House. And it did quite well against both of them, which is, you know, a very tough competition. It was February sweeps. As you know, sweeps are the rating periods. There's a 4 sweep periods a year, February, right. Let's see, November sweeps and so forth. And there's 4-month periods in the year, and that's where the network takes ratings and then base their advertising rates on those sweep periods.
Okay, hold that thought. We're talking with Duane Hickman here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD. 7900991 is the number to call. A half hour to go with Duane here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
In Montreal, you're with the News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
Hi, my name is Malik, and you're listening to my uncle, Peter Anthony Holder. Here on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800. Now, I have turned 4 years old. I have completely mastered the English language. So I can now tell you that the splendiferous audible transmission you are listening to is the fascinating program that my Uncle Peter does. I'm not going to tell you the numbers to call because my uncle's going to repeat them anyway. So here he is, the star of the program and the best darn uncle in the world.
You shouldn't say darn, Malik.
Why? Oh, sorry. Anyway, here he is, Peter Anthony Holder.
Thank you, Malik. And the numbers to call are 7900991 star talk 1-800-491-CJD. For the Laurentians, Eastern Townships, Ottawa, Hull area, and also the border states, we're talking with actor Dwayne Hickman, better known...
What a cute child.
Thank you. Better known as Dobie Gillis from the television series.
Yes.
Oh, so many years ago. I have a feeling that whenever somebody talks to you about the years you did on Dobie Gillis, they can't go on without mentioning people like Tuesday Weldon, Warren Beatty.
Well, you know, we had some pretty interesting people on that show. Forgetting Bob Denver for a second, that was in so many and went on to Gilligan. Warren Beatty did like 3 or 4 or 5 episodes, and he was Milton Armitage, the rich boy, quote, rich boy. He was really good, and Tuesday Weld was wonderful, and she went on to bigger and better things. And we had a lot. You see, it was a show that hired a lot of young people. Ryan O'Neill was in the show, Michelle Lee, Marlo Thomas. Oh, gosh, it goes on. A whole bunch of people that got their start, Bill Bixby. A lot of people got their start on Dobie. So we had really very good people. We were very fortunate. They were good.
And also an actor that I've often maintained is probably one of the most underrated actors in television, and he's still around, William Shallard.
Oh, yeah, Shallard. He played Mr. Pomfret, the teacher. Yeah, he was terrific. And he went on, I think he was Patty Duke's father.
Right.
In the Patty Duke show. Yeah, he was good. He's a good actor. He's still around. I see him every once in a while. And when Warren Beatty left the show, Steve Franken played the rich boy, and he was very good. He's still around, too. He played Chatsworth Osborne Jr. So we had, you know, like a stock company. It was fun. I mean, it was a good show. And it was very clever. You know, it was the first time they did a teenage show from the teen point of view. They had done Ozzie and Harriet and Father Knows Best and Donna Reed and all the shows, but they were family shows, and they were about the family and the parents and all that. Dobie was really about the kids, and from the kids' point of view. You know, Dobie started the first episode by saying, "My name's Dobie Gillis, and I'm 17 years old, and what I want is a girl, soft, round, creamy, dreamy girl for my very own. That's all I want, one lousy girl. And standing between me and that is a powerful obstacle." And then you cut to my father, Frank Phelan, who played Herbert T. Gillis. So that's what the statement of the show was. I want a girl. I don't want to work much. I don't want to earn money. I just want a girlfriend. And that was Dobie Gillis. And it was interesting and very well done. Max Schulman created it based on short stories and all that. He had been a novelist, and he wrote Rally Around the Flag, the movie, and a bunch of stuff. And he was very well thought of and really very good, Max Schulman. And he created it, and there were a bunch of short stories that sold very well in the 40s and 50s. So we were lucky, you know.
When you look at some of the people you worked with, and especially some of the guest stars that came and went through the course of the years you were on that show, did you get a sense of any of them going on to greater things at the time that they were on your show? Did you see somebody and say, "Oh, that person's on the rise," or "That person is a
person
of themselves"?
Oh, sure, you could spot them, yeah. Like Warren Beatty, I mean, you figured he was assured of stardom, you know. I mean, he went on to do Splendor in the Grass, and no, you could tell. You could tell. They were just a little bit different, a little bit better. And I don't know if it's better is fair. They were just, they had something. And I don't know what makes a person a hit or not. It's some quality that none of us know what it is, you know. And but you can sort of see it. You can see it in a person. But you don't always know what it is.
And considering the show you did deal with teenagers and the youth of the time, How would you compare it, I know we're living in a totally different world and a different time, to some of the shows that are on right now? I guess the biggest hit involving kids right now would be something like Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah. I don't know. The times are really, really different. But I think they're trying to do what we did. The shows today are much freer and looser. And, you know, I tell you, a real imitator, I think, and I don't mean that in a negative way, was the Happy Days. Happy Days was a Dobie Gillis kind of show, and a very good show, but more of the style of Dobie and kind of a little old-fashioned compared to some of the shows today. TV is very different today, and I must confess that I don't look at a lot of TV. I look at movies, and I look at news and sports and all that, but I don't look at a lot of half-hour comedies. I really don't. First of all, I've directed them. I've been in them. I was raised on them, and I'm not all that interested, and I don't think there's that many. I think, for example, Frasier is a good show. There's a few really good ones, but a lot of ones that are not so good.
What types of skills as an actor did you bring to the television scene, to the sitcom world, as a director?
Well, I brought a lot, I think. The understanding of how to play the comedy and how to do the scenes and how to act it. A director really has to have a couple things. He has to know that, but he also has to know the mechanical part of moving his cameras around and photographing it, because no matter how good it is, if you don't photograph it properly. So that's something I had to learn. But I had picked that up over the years somewhat, and then I learned it more when I really settled down. The acting part and the way scenes are played, I didn't have to learn so much. I had learned that over the years. So I brought a lot to it, I think, and I did some pretty good shows.
I remember there seems to be a lot of pretty good comedic actors over the years who have gone behind the camera. There's yourself.
Oh, yeah. The way things are done today, almost everybody that has a series directs the series. Yes. I don't know if you've noticed, but that's very common today.
But some who just direct even other series. You mentioned somebody who was on your show, the late Bill Bixby, in his
last
years
well,
as a great director.
I remember when I was at CBS, one of the shows I had was The Hulk and The Incredible Hulk, and I remember the shows he directed were really good, but again, he started directing, I believe, The Courtship of Eddie's Father he directed.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a lot of experience, was very good. But also, again, a little after my time, people began to direct their own shows. It became pretty common, and it is common today. So they get their start directing their own shows, and then when their own shows go off, they've got a lot of experience, and they go off and direct other people's shows.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Sure.
To star and direct in your
I'm not crazy about it, but I think it's good for the actor. I don't know that it's so good for the show. In other words, it gives the actor built-in experience as a director and gives him a chance to really learn his craft in a situation where everybody's going to be very supportive. He doesn't have to go out and work for a bunch of strangers. He has worked for the people in his own show. With the people in his own show. So it gives him a big one-upmanship. But I don't know that it's always good for the show, frankly. I think that it may sometimes hurt the show.
You mentioned that we live in a different time as far as television and the sitcoms are concerned. I'm just wondering how you think television will change, if at all, in light of what took place on September the 11th.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that we know yet. I mean, I think everything will change. I don't know if things are different in Canada, for example, you know, our neighbor to the north. I don't know much about your country, but I see the changes beginning in this country. I don't think it'll ever be the same here. I think we'll have to learn to live with a different set of behavior patterns and rules, regulations, and security and all that. And in terms of the media, in terms of television and movies, maybe it'll be a little more serious. Maybe comedies won't play quite as well, or maybe they'll play better. You know, in the 30s in this country, we had the Big Depression. Comedies really came to the fore, and it was one of the golden ages of comedy was the 1930s in the United States, when a lot of these wonderful comedians came along. Situation comedians like Cary Grant and people like that. It could go that way too, but I don't think it'll be frivolous. You know, I think it'll be different and maybe a little more serious, and maybe the comedy will be a little more sophisticated.
Would you like to be back on television on a regular basis?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think TV's a real hard job. I mean, it's a grind, and I've done it, and I don't know that I want to go back and do it at this point. But I'd be hard-pressed to turn down a really good opportunity. If it was a good show, something I really liked and wanted to do, I'd probably do it. But so, you know, it's like everything else, you know, the trade-offs, you know.
Since you were, as you mentioned, typecast with Dobie Gillis for many years after the show went off the air, I guess it'd be fair to say that there were probably some situations of programs or roles that came up that you would have liked to have had, but you didn't necessarily get the chance because you were Dobie Gillis.
Well, yeah, and also I was Mr. Clean Cut. You know, I was Mr., you know, goody-goody in a way. And at the time, toward the end of the 60s, the Vietnam thing was heating up and all that, and there were more roles for the anti-hero, you know, and there weren't as many roles for people like me. And they were, pardon me, there were more roles for people like Jack Nicholson, for example, mm-hmm. you know, kind of anti-society and anti-war and anti those things. And there weren't as many straight kind of roles like I would have been right for. So that was also a problem.
Could you have seen yourself, though, in one of those roles? If it
well,
were for Dobie Gillis?
I think I could have acted one of those roles, you know, given the opportunity, sure. But it's hard to get the parts, you know.
If since you've been a network executive,
uh-huh.
If you had the opportunity in the perfect world of creating the character that would bring Dwayne Hittman back to television on a regular basis, what kind of series would that be?
Well, it would be a comedy probably that's a little more sophisticated, more grown up than Dobie. I it would be a more of a Frasier type thing. It wouldn't be at all young. Unless I played the father of, like I had an idea for a long time I was going to sell, of my playing the father, Dobie Jr., it was called. And I was the father, I was Dobie Gillis, and my son was a teenager in the 90s. And that was my concept. And I thought that was very interesting that I was the father and I was Dobie Gillis and I had these 60s concepts and all that, and you had a teenager who was into, you know, the kind of music, the electronics, the videos, the, you know, Madonna music and all that sort of thing. And I thought that would make an interesting contrast. In so I'd do something like that. But again, I'd play a different part, different kind of character, but then that would be normal anyway after all these years. I couldn't play a Dobie Gillis kind of part, you know?
One of the things that's relatively new, I think, is the fact that we are seeing more and more long-form comedies, comedies that are shot for basically an hour and not the three-camera system, something like an Ally McBeal.
You're right, right. But is that really a comedy? I mean, the little bit I've seen that show, it seems like more of a drama than a comedy, or a dramedy, they call it.
Yeah.
They call them dramedies.
They seem to bridge the gap between comedy and drama. Would you like to do something like that?
Yeah, but I tell you, those hour shows are enough to kill you. They shoot, they really are. They shoot 12-hour days, and they really, I mean, they're tough. And I don't know that I want to work that hard, to be honest.
We have a few more minutes to go here with Dwayne Hickman on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800. If you have any questions for Dobie Gillis, 7900991 is the number. Star Talk 1-800-491-CJD. This is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
Now more of CJAD's Halder Overnight on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak with Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, a free call on Bell Mobility, and 800-491-CJAD.
And we are talking with Dwayne Hickman, better known as Dobie Gillis, here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800, who's had a varied career over the years in Hollywood and the entertainment business, including, I believe, working for Howard Hughes.
Oh, yes.
What
yes,
was that
I did
like?
That, too. I went to Las Vegas in 1970 and worked at the Landmark Hotel booking talent. I did that for about a year, and that was quite an experience.
Now, that was...
I'm not really a night person, and I'm not a gambler. And Vegas was not for me. But it was interesting. I met a lot of people. I booked a country western music on the Strip, which was the first when I did it. It was the first time it had been done. So it was a good experience. I learned a lot. I've done a lot of different things, as you can tell, from acting to executive stuff to booking talent to now I'm an artist. You know, so I've done a lot of things, and it's been an interesting ride. You know.
Now, did you actually work with Howard Hughes?
Oh no, no one worked. I
mean, did you see the man in the year you were working for him?
I usually tell people that I knew him very well. He and I hung out together and all that. But no, no one saw. I don't know anybody that saw. You know, hardly even saw him at all. You know, there was a fellow named Bob Mayhew who was in charge of the whole Hughes Nevada operations. It was called HNO, Hughes Nevada operations, and I don't think Bob Mayhew ever saw Howard Hughes. So, I mean, you know, he had 5 secretaries, and he supposedly lived in the Desert Inn penthouse and all that. So everybody used to talk about, well, Howard says, and Howard does this, and Howard wants this. And I'd think, you know, well, nobody's ever seen Howard, you know. So he was the original recluse, you know. But it was interesting, very interesting, the whole Hughes thing. Yeah, I mean, he was a billionaire when nobody was a billionaire, you know. Now we have tons of them. But in those days, he was one of a kind, you know.
Now, you mentioned your artwork. Is that a release for you to, you know?
Well, it started out as kind of a hobby, and people wanted to buy my stuff. So now I've created my own Frankenstein. Now I got to keep working all the time. I mean, I paint almost every day, and it's kind of tedious sometimes. But I like to do it, and people like my stuff, and I sell it, and you know, it's become like a kind of a occupation. So between that and the acting I do, like this Surviving Gilligan's Island, and I've got all kinds of projects. I've got that art expo in San Francisco I mentioned. My wife and I have put together a thing. My wife is an actress, Joan Roberts, a writer, actress. We put together a thing called a celebrity art show for the Actors Fund. The Actors Fund out of New York has suffered a lot of losses with this problem they've had back there, because of the actors that have, you know, been laid off the theater and so forth. And the Actors Fund takes care of actors and people behind the scenes as well, and dancers and so forth. And their money's kind of gone. So we're going to have this celebrity art show around the 15th of October, pardon me, November, 15th of November through the 18th here in Los Angeles. And we're going to exhibit celebrity art and sell some of it, and all the proceeds will go to the Actors Fund. Oh, we've got a bunch of people lined up, Phyllis Diller and Dom DeLuise, Christie Brinkley, Jane Seymour, people like Tony Bennett, you know, a whole bunch of people. And I think it would be quite nice. So I've got all kinds of things like that I'm always working on. So I stay very busy, and it's fun. And I may, you know, do more acting, hopefully.
You mentioned earlier the website, which is DwayneHickman.com, where people can actually see some of your work. I would assume with what's happened, that two of the ones I'm looking at right now on the website, The Flag and Stars and Stripes, would be drawing some attention.
You know,
attention.
That's funny. The Stars and Stripes, if you're looking at the website, that is a painting I did about 3 or 4 years ago. And we have made that into a poster, and I will be signing that in San Francisco. I'm sitting in my house in Encino, California, and it's hanging on the wall behind me, and I will take the original up to San Francisco and show that there. But I've always been a fan of, it sounds silly, but a fan of the flag, and I like to paint the flag. So when I'm not painting houses and gardens, I like to paint flags. But I did this several years ago, and it's very popular now. We've made little pins that people can wear, little like an inch by 2 inches on your lapel. It's bigger than the little flags that people wear. And based on that, Stars and Stripes. As a matter of fact, I painted a flag on the back of a Levi jacket that's going to be auctioned off up there or on eBay, one or the other. And I did that about a week ago and sent it to San Francisco. And on the back of this Levi jacket, I put a flag. And on the front, I put red, white, and blue on the little pockets. And then the little sign that people are wearing, you know, the little curly Q thing up on the left shoulder. So it's kind of fun, and I think in light of what happened here and the wave of patriotism, I think it's very important that we all get behind our country and stand together, you know.
Absolutely.
United we stand.
Absolutely. Certainly there is no moss growing on Duane Hickman. You've been a very, very busy man over the years doing all kinds of things.
Well, you've got to be flexible.
Yeah, well, certainly you have been more flexible than most with what you've done, from actor to executive, author, painter. The list goes on and on and on. And
yeah.
I'm sure there are still many things for you to conquer in the future.
I try to do it all.
For those who want to see you on television, they'll see you on CBS this coming Sunday. CBS's movie of the week, Surviving Gilligan's Island.
Right.
Which is on Sunday, October 14th, 9 to 11 p.m.
Exactly.
And you get to play a television executive. Anything else you're working on coming down the pike as far as that's concerned?
That's about it.
Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled for the work that you have coming your way later on. And again, people can check your website, which is
They can contact me through that website.
Okay, great. So it's DwayneHickman.com, and there's a link in from my site to yours. People can find it if they're not able to jot it down right now. It's DwayneHickman.
Or DobyTV, I think, .com will work.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
DobyTV and
Dolby Art. I think might work.
Dolby Art is another one too, which they can find your stuff.
Yeah, but anyway, my name's the sure thing. I think. I don't know. That's the one thing I haven't accomplished is a computer. I'm kind of not much of a computer person.
Yeah, I noticed that you mentioned William Shalit, and you've seen him. Have you had an opportunity to see any other co-stars that you?
Well, I run into him every once in a while. Yeah, and it's fun. It's always fun. It's always good to see him, and everybody looks good. We all look a little older, probably, but that's okay. You know, the alternative is not so good.
Yeah, but you don't age, though.
Oh, well, thank you.
Didn't I see a period where you had blonde hair?
Well, I had blonde hair in the beginning of Dobie.
Right.
And that was the first year, and that's a whole big, long story. But basically, Max Schulman thought Dobie should be a blonde, and they didn't want me to look like I looked on the Bob Cummings show, so they bleached my hair, and it looked weird, you know. I had a crew cut, and unlike with women where they part it and bleach the roots, with mine they bleached the whole head because it was a crew cut, and my hair started to fall out and everything. So that only lasted a while, and the second year I was back to brown hair.
Well, Duane, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yes.
And, much luck to you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Again, people can see you in the television movie on CBS, Surviving Gilligan's Island, where you play a television executive. It's on this Sunday on CBS from 9 to 11.
Right.
News is next here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.